Hello and welcome to Season 2 of Ride the Rails with Andy B. This episode is sponsored by TaylorMadeRail.com. I'm joined by Mark Smith, the man in 661, and in this episode we chat all things Interrail and Eurorail. Welcome on board, Mark.
Hello, Andy. All set to discuss the wonder that is Interrail.
Absolutely. Just prior to coming on, we were having a chat beforehand, and both Mark and I are very much veterans of Interrail. I did my first one at the age of 17 and a half, going all through the Balkans. What was your first experience on Interrail, Mark?
Oh, you started early. I think I was 19. It must have been. It was 1984. And I headed down through Spain to Morocco, reaching Marrakesh.
Okay, so we both started on pretty exotic journeys, really. Like back in that day, the Balkans were, well, it was Yugoslavia. One thing I do remember about that was changing trains in a place called Knin for the train to Zadar. And the town was being buzzed by fighter aircraft constantly. We were there about 2 hours for the connection, typical Balkans 2 hour connection, and yeah, it just had a really strange feeling about it. And then a year later I went on one Interrail passing through Belgrade, and it was a time of a military draft for the army. And in the Belgrade ticket hall, if you remember, at the old station, kind of the reasonably grand ticket hall, there were groups of youth stood there, but they were very much in the ethnic groups. And even then, I could feel a tension, which, interestingly, these days when I travel in the Balkans, a completely different travel experience from back in the day. Did you get to the Balkans on your Interrails?
Well, actually, the same year, went down to Greece. It's amazing to think that there were then two trains a day from Munich to Athens, one running night, day, night, and the other running day, night, day, all the way through Yugoslavia and via Belgrade.
And who were the trains supplied by? Were they Deutsche Bahn couchettes that they had on there?
I was in a Yugoslav sleeping car.
Ah, of course.
Apartment to myself.
Of course.
But yeah, I think they were German couchettes. Yeah, there were certainly German couchettes on the day, night, day train, the Acropolis. I was on the Hellas Express.
I imagine that would have been quite a challenging journey in the height of summer, kind of with a lack of air conditioning.
Well, you had opening windows in those days, Andy. You just drag them open and nice cool breeze wafted in. I can remember I was very careful and put all my rubbish in a litter bin over the course of 2-3 days.
I know what you're going to say.
Until we got into Greece, where the Yugoslav attendant came in, picked up the litter bin and emptied it out the window. Yeah, that was things like that you remember.
Absolutely. Well, I suppose it's a good job the windows did open, that he couldn't chuck it and it all landed in the corridor. So, Mark, Interrail and Eurorail used to be two very distinct products, with Interrail targeting the European market and Eurorail for the international market. These days, they seem to have come together and actually almost in effect to be exactly the same. Is that right?
They used to be very different. That's right. Eurail for overseas visitors and Interrail for us European residents. And Eurail used to be more expensive and used to be a different product range as well. But over recent years, they've converged and you can pretty much think of them as the same product range doing the same thing with actually the same prices now. And maybe in the future, they'll literally merge. But at the moment, there are still two almost identical product ranges. With different names.
I guess in the international market, Eurorail is a very much recognised brand. So I guess it would make sense and the Interrail is known in the European market.
They're very well-known brands, and it will be quite difficult to come up with a new brand without losing something. It's got huge recognition, the Eurorail brand, in places like the United States and Australia.
Now, one thing that surprised me with the two products coming together, I always thought one of the good things about the Eurorail, they used to sometimes clump countries together. So you had a product where you could explore a few countries, but you weren't paying the global price, and which covers countries that you wouldn't go to. I'm trying to think if Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, for example, were on one pass. Can you recall those?
Oh,
Were they,
absolutely.
yeah.
It used to be really complicated, and they put a lot of effort into making it very simple. There's now one country passes for any one individual country, or the global pass if you want to go to more than one country. So you can't really get much more simple than that. And I think that's a step in the right direction because there wasn't always a vast price difference between global and two or three country.
Right. Just talking of prices, I felt that the introduction of the 3 month Interrail has been an absolute boon for travel, particularly for somebody like myself who has the opportunity to spend up to 3 months out on the rails, that you can get a first class 3 month ticket across the whole of Europe for 1200 euros. It's just a phenomenal value. And if you're going through Austria, you can go into the first class lounges. So you could go and get your breakfast, pop in the evening for an evening cocktail, and then carry on your travels. So there's lots of good opportunities there for long duration travels.
Well, that's right. But even a shorter period for people with less time, even a shorter interrail, 5 days in 1 month works out at only sort of 56 euros a day for unlimited train travel across the whole continent. And that's if you're an adult. If you're under 28, then it works out at 42 euros a day.
Well, yeah,
So, I mean, that's quite amazing.
the 3 month first class for the youngsters, for the youth pass, is 900 euros. If you go second class, it's 670. So in some ways, it's a bit of a no-brainer to go for first class because it isn't really that much more. So I can just envisage all these trains in Italy in the summer being full of first class youth Interrailers getting the most out of their money. The lower end of the price scale, well, you mentioned the 5 day, so the 7 day in 1 month for youngsters is 251 euro, which again is a pretty good bargain, particularly if you're doing long distances. And then not forgetting,
36 euros a day.
and not forgetting, there have over the past couple of years, there have been very frequent offers from Interrail, sometimes offering 20% off the price of a ticket. Which, when you factor that in, I think is unbeatable. Even if you were just doing a few journeys, probably better to buy an Interrail when one of the sales is on.
That's true. And the other thing to point out is children. Kids get a free Interrail pass if they're travelling with an adult on an adult pass. So if you've got a couple of kids in tow, you can factor that into the equation as well.
Oh, fantastic. And with children on Interrails, I think is it up to the age of 11 inclusive that are counted as
Yeah, under
children?
12s.
Yeah. Okay. So take bearing in mind those what can be bargain Interrail prices. Does it make sense to actually bother with point-to-point tickets anymore, or is the Interrail the way to go?
Well, this is the first question that everyone asks me. Should I buy ordinary tickets or a pass? And there's some I particularly find with overseas visitors that they're sort of conditioned to think if they're stepping onto a train at all in Europe, they have to buy a Eurail pass. Of course, you don't. in a nutshell, if you're only making a couple of short trips like Pisa to Rome, well, it's Pisa to Florence, it's €8 each way. You really don't need a pass. Even if you're traveling long distance, if it's only one or two trips and you know exactly what dates you want, I mean, let's put some numbers on it. We've said that five days in 1 month pass is €56 a day. Well, Berlin to Prague, if you book in advance, can be as little as €19. If you buy on the day, a full flexible ticket is over €70. So book advance purchase point to point if it's only a few trips and you know exactly when you're going to go. But if you want flexibility, you want to keep your options open, then a pass may well save money over the full flex ticket. And even if you're doing a really extensive trip, don't forget that even if it's cheaper to buy advance purchase, if anything goes wrong with any one part of this great big house of cards, you know, a landslide, a flood, fire, national rail strike, and that house of cards could collapse. And you could find yourself stuck with a load of very expensive pieces of paper for trains that you can't make. So a rail pass gives you sort of built-in insurance. In fact, I'll give you a concrete example. Mrs. 61 and I were once traveled down to Italy, ticketed on an Interrail. And on the way back, there was a rail crash in Brussels, which completely blocked the Paris to the Netherlands line. We were heading back to our in-laws. It blocked it the day before we were due to go back. But because we had Interrail, we just diverted through Switzerland and Germany and got back that way. So that was good. Built-in insurance. So think about it. A rail pass if you're doing something extensive.
Well, yeah, no, I've certainly had those experiences as well. And of course, we must mention the Interrailer's Bible, which is the European Rail Timetable. Both on my Andy B travel site and on Mark's site, there are links on there to buy the European Timetable. And in the scenario that Mark just mentioned, becomes invaluable that you can plot alternative routes, which can be quite difficult just to do on journey planners.
Yeah, it's definitely a sound investment if you're going to do a lot of travel around Europe. And I'd also say get the map as well. The European Rail Timetable people do the best rail map of Europe that's out there as well.
And I second that. And the map is in a format that you can actually highlight the routes that you've traveled on. So anybody like me with my hashtag All the Lines Europe mission, it's a brilliant way of recording your journeys. There's a lot of red lines now on my map, and the non-red lines are very much over in the Balkans, Romania, Bulgaria. So once travel starts up, I'm hopefully going on an Interrail to that part of the world to fill in my red lines on the European rail map. So are you a line filler, Mark?
I was many years ago, but I've sort of lost track now. I just travel for the scenery and the culture, Andy.
You grew up. I'm still in my youthful mode. Mark, I think this is a good time just to take a quick break for a message from this episode's sponsor, TaylorMade Rail. And after the break, I think we should get into what I've christened the good, the bad, and the mixed. Not the ugly, the mixed, in terms of countries where you can use Interrails. So see you after the break. Season 2 of Ride the Rails is sponsored by TaylorMade Rail, the train holiday specialist. They offer flight-free, independent holidays with the mission to simplify the complexities of rail travel to create sustainable and civilized holidays across the European continent. No itinerary is too intricate for them, thanks to their years of experience in the rail holiday business. Some of their most popular itineraries are in Switzerland, including the famous Glacier Express and Jungfrau Mountain Railway. Travelling to Italy via the Alps is also another popular option. They feature longer haul rail adventures, such as London to Istanbul, travelling north to the Arctic Circle, south to Morocco, and east to Russia. not forgetting the UK holidays, an area that has seen significant levels of interest for 2021 travels. They have a high level of repeat customers thanks to their great service, clear layout of documentation, and reassuring in-trip support in the event of any hitches. They receive consistently excellent reviews on FIFO, the independent review site, where their average score is 4.8 out of 5, a testament to their customer-centric focus and product choices. TaylorMadeRail.com. Welcome back to our discussion on Interrail and Eurails. Before the break, I mentioned the good, the bad, and the ugly, or rather the mixed countries. With Interrails, I think you can split Europe into good countries, Germany, Austria, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Benelux, and Switzerland, bad countries, France and Spain, mixed countries, Italy, Poland, Scandinavia. Now, why do we class them as such? Mark, how would you describe a good country?
Well, back in the old days, an Interrail pass gave you free travel just about everywhere. But these days, you need to pay reservation fees for certain high-speed trains. And Europe pretty much divides down the middle between the French and the Germans. If you think of a line down the middle with France, Italy, Spain, Portugal to the left, and Switzerland, Germany, Austria, Benelux to the right, you can reckon that in the countries in the West, the France, Italy, Spain, it's pretty much 10 euros a pop for a reservation fee for every long distance intercity train. Whereas the countries on the right in the East, you can pretty much hop on any train and show your pass when asked. And even if a reservation is required in those countries, it'll just be the normal sort of two or three euro fee that you have to pay, so no big deal. But it's important to know that in advance, because some people get a shock thinking they've paid for unlimited train travel, then they travel in Spain and France and Italy and get hit by a 10 euro fee every time they step on a train.
Actually, in Spain, sometimes isn't it quite a lot more than 10 euros on some of the trains?
Well, the big problem, actually, the biggest one, are international trains between France and neighbouring countries. Thalys, Amsterdam, Paris charges a 25 euro fee, and Paris, Barcelona on the international TGV is a whopping great 34 euro reservation fee. I mean, normal fares start at 39 euros without a pass. That's a bit of an issue.
There are some positive developments in France from an Interrailist perspective. We're gradually seeing the reintroduction of long distance non-high speed trains. So for example, recently Paris to Strasbourg has been linked again. So budget Interrailers, you can save a 10 euro fee by taking the slow train. It takes about 5 hours from 4 or 5 hours from Paris to Strasbourg, but slow travel, retro travel, see the country at ground level rather than zooming along. So I think sometimes there's benefits to avoid the fast trains. And Italy is another example where that can be done.
Yeah, because if you stick to the slower intercity non-high speed trains, you can board without a reservation. So yes, they take the old routes, they take a lot longer, but they'll get you there, they'll show you some great scenery, and there's nothing extra to pay.
Yeah, the thing with the France is an interesting case, I think, with Interrails. In the past, they used to restrict the number of seats they made available for Interrail pass holders. So you could turn up a station a couple of days before you were due to travel to make your reservation, and you'd be told, no, the train is full. But they changed that, and now it's last seat availability is available for Interrail holders. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm glad to say that they stopped that shenanigan. And what you'll get on French domestic high-speed trains, TGVs, there's a limited availability 10 euro fee, which you'll get if you book well in advance. If you don't book in advance, there is an unlimited availability €20 fee. I say unlimited, it's limited only by the number of seats on the train. When the train's full, the train's full. But if there's a seat left, you can have it for €20. But still, €20 when you've already bought a pass, well, it's a lot cheaper to travel in Germany when you can just hop on and show your pass with nothing extra to pay.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It does, and those reservation fees do start to build up. So say if your Interrail is focused on France and Spain, that really is a question of, are advanced tickets a better deal? But just going to say, Mark, in saying that, say, for example, if you're based in the UK and wanted to do that journey, the Interrail gives you a free return travel from anywhere in the UK to London, and then a discount on the Eurostar across. So I think it's very much a spreadsheet job to try and balance which is the better option.
Well, you've raised 2 points there, actually. I mean, the first is that Eurostar are now full members of the Interrail and Eurail scheme. So yes, your pass does cover Eurostar. There's a €30 reservation fee to pay for the Eurostar from London to Paris or London to Brussels. The other issue is that for travel in internationally from France and in places like Spain, it's not just the fee. You can't book the pass holder reservation fee online. So you either have to wait till you get to Spain and do it at the station, or you have to pay an agency to do it, and they'll charge you the €10 fee plus a 10 or 15 or €20 booking fee. And at that point, you think it will be a lot easier just to buy an ordinary advance purchase ticket online with no fee attached to it. So there's a convenience or lack of convenience factor, as well as a reservation fee factor for places like Spain, which is unfortunate.
I wonder what the reasoning is why they don't permit. Why they don't open access to reservations for international travellers?
I can't see any logical reason. I think it's just the management attitude towards passes in those countries.
They're not particularly keen on them?
Maybe they think they're not getting their fair share from the revenue. But of course, Eurail and Interrail do track where people go on their passes, and the revenue from the passes is allocated based on market research telling them where people go and which trains people use.
Right. You mentioned with your first Interrail that you went down to Morocco. Back then, was Morocco included on the Interrail pass?
We are going back some, aren't we? Yes, 1984 it was. It's not anymore, but I mean, that's no great problem because rail fares in Morocco are pretty cheap anyway, and you can just turn up and buy a ticket and it's not expensive.
Yeah, yeah. So the European passes cover 33 countries, and Turkey is also included in the Interrail, as part of the Interrail. For a little while, maybe 1 or 2 years, amazingly, Russia was included as an Interrail partner. Do you recall that period?
I didn't get to use it, unfortunately.
Yeah, me neither. But to think if you, well, say if you had a 3 month Interrail to go over to Vladivostok and back for what is it for a youth? €900, buy it in a 20% discount period. That would have been quite an attractive proposition. Of course, you'd have to pay supplements for the sleeping cars or the Platzkartni, but yeah, what a great experience that would have been, and a bargain,
yeah,
as well.
Absolutely.
I wonder if Belarus included themselves for that, or if
I think back then it was all Russia, wasn't it? All the USSR, good old USSR.
Yeah, those were the days, Mark. Back in the USSR, did you visit Russia when it was part of the USSR?
Oh, I certainly did. I went on a school trip in 1982 that took us on a 1940-built turbine steamer to Oslo, Stockholm, and what was then Leningrad. And then we took the train to Moscow and train back to Berlin and London. Those were indeed the days.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah, I think I went in 86, 87, and did the Red Arrow from Moscow to St. Petersburg.
You were lucky. We watched the Red Arrow leave to a crescendo of martial music played all over the station. It was one of the most impressive train departures I've ever seen. Then we followed it to Moscow on Relief Train 52 with the Formica and the cracked windows. But one day I will ride that Red Arrow.
Absolutely. And good to know they still play the music for the departures.
I'm pleased to hear it.
Yeah. So we've touched on supplements. Another thing that lots of interrailers do to maximize their time traveling in Europe is take overnight trains. Again, kind of different types of overnight trains. So in Germany, you could still travel on an overnight train without paying a reservation fee, a supplement. They run ICE trains overnight, for example, from Hamburg to Munich. Probably not the most comfortable of journeys, but it's free of charge for an interrailer. So you save on your accommodation and you arrive in a new city. Probably not very refreshed, because I don't think they can turn the lights down on the ICEs on the overnight trains. But the night train network throughout Europe is accessible to Interrail pass holders. Have you got an idea of what people would be paying supplement-wise for the night trains?
If we take the Austrian Railways Nightjet network, Nightjet is probably the biggest network of night trains around Central Europe, you're talking €37 supplement for a bunk in a basic couchette, or something like €70 for a bed and a two-bed sleeper.
Okay.
That's obviously on top of the pass price. And that can be booked online at the Austrian Railways website.
Okay. And for the sleeping car in Austrian Railways, they give you a breakfast in the morning, I believe?
Yeah, that's that you end up with the same amenities as any other passenger. If you're in couchettes, it's a light breakfast. If you travel in the sleeper, it's a nice complimentary glass of fizzy sparkling wine in the evening and a more extensive breakfast next morning.
And I have to say, one of my favourite rail experiences in Europe is on the Nightjet double-deck sleepers. Upstairs. So the ensuite cabins are upstairs. It's quite a large compartment. It's got a table, a couple of chairs, ensuite bathroom, bunk beds. When you walk into the cabin, you've got your sparkling wine on the table waiting for you. I think that's a fabulous rail experience.
It's a lovely way to travel. One of my favourite ways to travel is Nightjet.
Yep. In Finland as well, where they have the double deck trains, my best night's sleep on a European sleeper was in Finland on the upper deck of their kind of twin decks. Smoothest ride, slept all the way through, whereas normally I can't sleep on night trains. And again, those are available when you're on an Interrail to pay a supplement to get into those sleeping cars. So we mentioned Eurostar, and you gave the rate of €30. Now that's €30 each way?
That's right. €30 if you've got a second class pass, or €38 for travel in Standard Premier if you've got a first class pass. Now it's worth saying that the Eurostar pass holder fares are limited availability, but they're in the third price bucket from the top. So if you think of Eurostar as having a dozen, 12 price buckets from the most expensive fare to the cheapest fare, they're in the third most expensive price bucket from the top. Now that means that a lot of the time you'll find rail pass fares available even on the day at short notice, but there might be trains where busy trains on a Friday, business trains, trains in July and August that don't have any pass holder availability on them. So it's good to bear that in mind. You cannot just turn up in Paris or turn up at St. Pancras and expect to get on the next Eurostar. I have heard of people who haven't been able to get on the Eurostar for 2 or 3 days at absolute peak periods.
Oh, really?
But normally, normally with the third price bucket down as being the price bucket where they put the rail pass fares, it's normally not too difficult to get on a Eurostar on a particular day, even on the day or at 24 hours notice.
I guess for ourselves being based in the UK, that in some ways is not such an issue because we'll always be pre-booking the start and the end of our trips. But I guess other people who are doing spontaneity, say somebody who happens to be in France and they think, oh, should we go to the UK? Then that could become an issue with lack of availability.
Well, if you've got a pass, I think it makes sense to book your outward journey in advance. Then you know when you're setting off, and you can book an onward train if you need to, book an onward sleeper somewhere. But you've got a pass. Keep the return open. I mean, the worst that'll happen is you'll have to let a few Eurostars go before you find one with availability, or you might have to stay overnight and travel the next day. But it's good to keep your options open.
Or, of course, you could do rail sail. You could take a train up to Calais, hop on a ferry across, and then pick up a train from Dover up to London and onwards.
That's right. If all else fails, you've still got a ferry.
It's the Interrail's not valid on the ferries, I'm assuming.
It gives reductions on some ferries,
Okay.
but not all of them.
Right. So all's not lost if the Eurostars looking busy or fully booked. Another innovation that Interrail introduced last year, or possibly early this year, was an electronic version of the Interrail. So you download it to your smartphone, and that acts as your ticket and also your travel diary. I haven't sampled a trip yet using that. I must admit, I'm not a big fan of it. I much prefer having a paper pass. Call me old-fashioned, but I like to keep one as a souvenir. Also, I think it's less likely that you would actually lose your pass because I think when you go, say, if you're going out for drinks in Paris or whatever, you're not going to take your Interrail with you. You leave that in your accommodation, but you'll take your phone with you. Which, what happens if you lose it or it gets nicked? What happens with the pass then? And also, a paper pass doesn't run out of power. Have you got any views on that?
I haven't tried the new electronic pass yet. And there's certainly some people who like having it all on their phone, but you then live in mortal fear of losing your phone or dropping it and breaking it. But I mean, running out of power, I would never travel without a power bank, a backup battery. With so many things being e-tickets these days, reservations, needing your phone to look up train tickets and train times and so forth, always carry a power bank.
I wonder if train guards will start to carry multi-cable phone banks. So when they come up to people and say, "Oh, my phone's run out. I can't show you my ticket." Not a problem, sir. Here we go. We'll power it up for you. That will be the next innovation on the railways, I think. So, Mark, have you any plans once lockdown finishes to head out on an Interrail?
Too many to mention.
All
But
right.
I think once we are allowed to finally travel, I'm not quite sure where I'm going to go first. I'm going to be like a dog with two tails.
How old are your children now, Mark?
15 and 12. So,
So no free
yeah.
children anymore.
No free children anymore. That's right. Children are not free, Andy. I found that out when they were born.
Fair enough, fair enough. Mark, I think we've done quite a nice review there of the Interrail and Eurail product, pros and cons, mainly pros. So thanks very much for your time, and I look forward to catching up with you next week. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Until next time.
Thanks. Bye-bye.